welcome to another episode of Startup Radio. Your host is me, Charles Mudd, and I'm pleased to be talking with Gabriella Ribeiro today, talking about travel, exploratory journeys. We're going to get into a lot of things that anybody needs to know in planning trips and so forth very shortly. Of course, Startup Radio is a member of the STEM Dadia Network with our sister shows, STEM Voices and Gaming Chords. But again, we are here today to talk about startups and on Startup Radio with Gabriella Ribeiro. Gabriella, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So, I understand that your focus is travel, and from what I've read, it's really been almost a lifelong passion with both your parents being heavily involved in the travel industry. Can you kind of give how your exposure to travel and vacations and seeing the world arose?
Yeah, I mean, I had a really unique upbringing. My parents actually met when they were working in an airline, so it kind of was meant to be. But my dad had, kind of a unique travel business and also ran a lot of charter flights in the 80s when that was popular. And so we were sort of always on a plane and to very strange places. And my parents just always kind of had that philosophy that if we could get somewhere or there was a ticket available and we could do it, we just got up and went. We were kind of like the strange family. Like, we didn't go to Disney a lot, but we'd find ourselves in Morocco or Portugal or Spain or things like that.
Wow.
And I was kind of used to that, and I never thought about it as a career. I kind of, I went the lawyer route. Actually, that's what I was meant to be when I started college, and kind of pursued that. And then I said, you know what, like, I really like to write. So I switched to journalism, and I was kind of all over the place. And then when I graduated college, I was looking for a job in TV news, and my dad, who was still in travel, kind of said, hey, I found out about this job. Just take it in the meantime while you're looking for something, in your career track. And I wound up loving the job, and it was in travel, and it just kind of kept getting better and better. It was working at a tour operator, a big travel company. And, it was very low level in the beginning. I wasn't making much, but all of a sudden I just kind of started to get promoted. And, I was really dynamic and I wanted to change things. And I thought I, knew everything in my early 20s. And, it just turned into kind of a beautiful career. And I said, why am I fighting this? Why am I trying to pursue something else when I really enjoy this? And it just kind of carried me through, and years later I started my own business, travel marketing. And years later after that, I launched a new business, Exploratory Journeys, where we, create unique travel experiences for people. So it's been all over the map, always in travel. And I've just, I feel really lucky to be able to, do something I love every single day.
Well, let's dive right into Exploratory Journeys, and we can circle back to some of the other things. But what is Exploratory Journeys, and who would be using that? Who are your customers?
Our customers are, I'll tell you who they're not first. They are not people who want to go on a Caribbean cruise. They are not people who want to go to Jamaica and sit on the beach for 7 nights. They are the people that want to hella hike in New Zealand. They are the people that want to get on a small boat and go up country in Vietnam and spend a night in a village with a family and learn how to cook. They are the people that perhaps have a real passion for wine and want to go out and snip grapes in a vineyard and stomp them and design their own wine label and, blend their own wine. Anybody who's looking for what we call a journey that leaves a footprint on your soul. So more authentic experiences, things that we sort of take a person's interests, twist them up a bit, and give them a vacation experience that they really never knew they always needed.
So now it sounds like that you could basically take or work on a journey or something from scratch, but at the same time, if somebody already has a trip planned, are you able to add unique experiences to that so that they can enhance for maybe a day or 2 days on a week trip that they may already be taking?
Absolutely. We do that in a couple of different ways. We can, definitely take someone's itinerary that they have and like you said, enhance it, depending on what they're what their goals are, what they're, you know, trying to achieve, if it's in a particular niche, or just, you know, if they're interested in exploring something new. And then we also have something we call the 48-hour power jaunt, which we launched. It can be added, a lot of people, you know, business people use it, I guess, you know, more than anybody of our clientele. And that's really itineraries that are 2 days in length that are designed to give you the best of the best of a particular city in just that short time. So lots of people who are traveling on business opt to call us and say, well, I'm already going to Prague, for example, you know, and I'm at a conference, but I want to do something on the weekend. So we can design those jaunts for those people, or, you know, or anybody else that's just, you know, looking to add something on, or even just simply travel just for 2 days. So yeah, we can help them in a variety of ways.
So one of the things about Startup Radio that we try to get into is not only talk about the businesses and what they are, but also talk about, you know, some of the things that you've learned or that you'd recommend to a young startup, and some of the difficulties that you may have encountered and you know, muddled through or survived. And so looking back, I mean, both with True Marketing, I believe that's the travel and marketing firm, or sales and marketing firm, but a focus on travel is my understanding. And then also with Exploratory Journeys, what has been the most, you know, what wisdom have you learned? What is the most significant thing right now that you've learned in starting and operating your own business?
The positive side, I mean, there's so many of starting your own business, but the real thing I always kind of like to instill in people is, you know, it might not be the right thing for everybody, but for me, I'm not an overthinker. I'm not a crazy planner. I just feel like if it's in my gut and I want to do something, then I'm just going to find a way to do it. And I find a lot of people get stuck in, you know, their own mind or stuck in fear, you know, and very rarely do they want to pull the trigger. And I think that, you know, my best advice is always just go for it, make it happen. You know, if you have, you know, an idea, then you have to do it. If it's burning inside you, you have to. You know, but the challenge that I always had from the beginning, and I've gotten much better with it, but I would caution anybody starting up, is managing cash flow. I think that is such a thing that people don't spend enough time on when they're planning their business. A lot of people have great marketing ideas and they have visions for where they want to take the company. But, you know, at the same time, you have to pay the bills. And your mortgage doesn't stop, your rent doesn't stop. And, you know, there are so many times where we get caught up, and me too. I had a lot of sleepless nights when I had first started with, you know, vendors not paying or clients paying late. So preparing for that is a huge thing to not overlook and not underestimate, because, you know, when you're not getting a steady paycheck, it's a huge change of life. So if you don't have anything to fall back on, it can cause you a lot of stress. I would say that's the number one thing that I think is under researched, I'd put it that way, for a young entrepreneur.
And, you know, looking back, where and talking, I mean, you do marketing, but how did you get into, you know, what do you use or where did you go to market your businesses? Is it just using online resources, or, you know, what avenues do you think are best for a startup company? Or does it depend on the niche, the actual business that they're operating?
I think it depends on the niche, and I'm kind of in a unique spot because I operate two different types of businesses. My True Marketing company, which is my travel marketing firm, is really kind of a B2B type of business. So there really isn't a lot of advertising that I do. I get new clients simply by referral and word of mouth. So, you know, just my marketing is just really, I mean, well, my marketing efforts are, you know, are different in the company, but how I market myself is really just doing a great job networking and keeping relationships going so that people tend to continue to refer me and refer my firm. With Exploratory Journeys, that's a B2C company, so we have to be visible, but I do things in a different way. I really don't pay to advertise. I don't believe in a lot of that, especially for my company. Travel is really all about showing, you know, it's very visual. And what I've done to market the company is I've created some ambassadors, And I basically use the money I would have maybe used, you know, for marketing in traditional channels, and I send them on trips. They happen to be influencers or really, really great storytellers with beautiful networks of their own. And I send them on trips, and they document every single thing, and they create such incredible buzz that they say so many things that I couldn't. So that's really what I've been investing in, and it has turned into a lot of new business for us.
Very interesting. And then I'm sure that they do that through social media and their followers and turn around. 100%. And I think that I've heard, you know, a number of people, a number of different businesses using those kind of influencers and so forth. Now, the interesting thing is, though, of course, in some industries is regulating. And this is a question often that comes up in certain businesses when you're paying somebody to post about it, right, is whether the customers are aware that those particular individuals are influencers or does it appear that they're just a consumer traveling. But how do you find those people? Do you go out and look for the influencers, or do they more approach you? Or are they maybe existing customers that you say, hey, would you like to do this for me? How do you find them?
They're actually, we don't invest in, like, you know, people who call themselves influencers. I probably should clarify it. What works for us is these are people in my network that are all, at the end of the day, very, very good friends of mine as well. So, you know, and I know them, I trust them. I know a little bit of who their circles are, and some of them are very unique people, you know, with very interesting, whether it's client base or friend base. So we have to know them and trust them and, you know, to be able to do this. So these people are not paid. They're simply, they can go on the trip. But it's not a financial, you know, it's not that we're hiring them. It's basically they're taking the trip and opting to showcase it. So it's a little bit different than kind of somebody that we don't know. Yeah, and it kind of works for us because people know that we have a connection, and they know that, you know, they are close with us, and that, you know, it all kind of makes sense, you know, why they're similar to me and that they love travel. So yeah, that's the connection that we use. It has to be somebody who can do it, you know, because not everybody can tell a great story. Everybody can go on a trip, but not a lot of people can communicate it the right way.
Right.
So yeah, it has to be the right person.
So where is your favorite place to go? Where is it that if you woke up one day and could choose anywhere to go on a vacation, where would that be?
Well, I mean, my standard default is Portugal. I mean, I'm half Portuguese, kind of, you know, grew up going there all the time, and I go as often as I can, and that's more nostalgic. But really, my heart is very much in South Africa. And I'm fortunate to go a couple of times a year. We do a lot of work there, both business and also personal. I do a lot of volunteering. And it's a very, very much a life-changing place.
And when you say South Africa, you're referencing the country rather than just the geographic region, correct?
Correct. I mean, I'll go anywhere in all of Africa. I never hesitate, but South Africa has a very special place for me.
And what are your thoughts on Europe? Where are the exciting places to go right now? I mean, I imagine that there are so many in the places that I've seen in Europe. There's always something to see. It's exciting. It's vibrant. But where are the places that you seem to see your customers wanting to go?
The number one right now that we cannot literally, like, can't keep on the shelves is Croatia. Everybody just sort of woke up recently. So many reasons. I mean, I credit a lot of it to Game of Thrones. I mean, I love the show, but really so much of it is filmed there. And I think, you know, we even have a tour that addresses so many of the sites, and it's unbelievable. But I think Croatia really has woken up as far as, you know, attracting tourists from the U.S. And they've done a bit of marketing on their own, but it's got everything. I think people need to know that they want to go to a city where it's, you know, it's still kind of as it once was, or a destination as it once was. In Croatia, you don't see a lot of crazy skyscrapers. You don't see a lot of overdevelopment. You see something that looks like it might have looked that way 1,000 years ago, and it's a city. You know, you've got 1,200 islands. There's adventure prospects. There are national parks, amazing beaches. The yachting and, you know, private yacht prospects are incredibly inexpensive. So people really can live like a rock star on a budget, and it really has just attracted people for so many. And the food is unbelievable. I had the good fortune to go last year, and I'm still thinking about things I ate. So there's so many things to discover, and I think people are just kind of going and telling people about it. And yeah, I think their own ambassadors are doing the work for them, but it's a hot destination.
It's very interesting that you say that, and I'm going to actually, I am a Game of Thrones fan, and so I will be investigating that myself. But how, let's take a step back. How did the idea for exploratory journeys come about?
Well, I've been traveling all my life, and I've been fortunate to take a lot of trips and been to more than 100 countries, which, you know, I'm still counting. And I've always taken furious notes, like what's the best room, or you know, what was cool about this view, or what was the greatest dish I had in this particular city. And I was kind of like just blogging, you know, and giving the information away for free, and people were enjoying it. And then I kind of woke up one day and said, you know what, I really think I could do this. I could put this stuff together for people, you know, rather than just kind of passing my ideas off and having them go find someone to do it. I just figured I can do it probably better than a lot of other people. And, you know, as I said, I'm not an overthinker. So I kind of put everything together. I said, what is it going to take for me to start this? I put it together. I had a potential client who said they would use me once I was quote unquote official. And that was that, you know, I mean, I got all the legal issues sorted and then the particulars sorted to start the company. And that was really it. Off I went with the first client and it just turned into many more. So it wasn't a huge, like, I didn't plan for it for my whole entire life. It was an idea that I was kind of like brewing. And one day I just woke up and said, all right, you know what do I need to get this started? Not the best advice, but it works for me.
Yeah, and it sounds like that you had one advantage too, in that exploratory journeys emerged while you also had your marketing firm during the day. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah, because I had a job already, you know, or my company already, so there is cash flow and there is, you know, there's something there. And being in travel, it's nice and flexible, I'd say. You know, as far as planning travel, it doesn't have to be done between the hours of 9 and 5. In fact, if you're dealing with people in different countries, you can do things off hours and still, you know, and still get to a domestic client here, you know, in a reasonable amount of time. So it didn't detract from what it was doing, and it only has really kind of served to enhance my other business.
And let's take a step back even further. What prompted you, or how did you start True Marketing? I mean, what prompted you to make the launch, going from being an employee of others to, your own business, somebody that may employ people, that you set your own hours and so forth? What was the impetus or the trigger for that?
I think growing up with an entrepreneur as a father kind of framed me, you know, in such a way that I always knew I kind of had to do that. It just was in me. And I thought it was really smart to kind of start at a quote unquote boot camp type of environment, you know, to see, okay, do I like corporate or do I not? The answer was no, I do not. So I spent a couple of years there, and it was really good. It was a huge learning experience for me to learn how to deal with other people, other personalities. I always knew the way I work best is when people are not looking over my shoulder, when I can thrive and you know, work at crazy hours, that's how I do best. And that, you know, it wasn't the best fit for me to be in sort of a box. So I wanted to gather knowledge, and I wanted to make some contacts and travel, which I certainly did. I was traveling probably once a month for many years, which was great when you're in your 20s. And then I realized I got my MBA, and I wanted to do that while I was working. I didn't want to stop. So it just, the schedule sort of fit at that point. And just when I got my MBA, I said, you know what, I'm gonna do this. And fortunately, I had a hotel that approached me while I was working at this company and said, you know what, we'd love to hire you and you can do this. And I took them as my first client. So they really helped me get sorted, you know, started up and used to working from home and that type of thing. So that was really kind of where it started.
Are your trips with exploratory journeys, are they more targeted toward couples, families, individuals, or is it a mix of all of the foregoing?
It's a mix, because what we really serve best is a certain type of personality. So it could be a single person, it could be a group or a family. It has to be someone who's a little bit okay with getting out of their comfort zone, and somebody who's looking for something that'll build amazing memories, not just simply get on a plane, get on a tour bus, take a trip, check boxes, and come back home. It has to be someone who's more open-minded and what we call globally curious. That's kind of how we define our travelers. They want to see more, do more. They're not afraid to meet people. They're not afraid to taste foods, and they're interested in kind of delving further in a destination.
Right.
So that's the reason why they kind of, find us.
Have you ever done anything in Sweden?
We have sent clients to Sweden. I am, I found out about a tree hotel there. So that's actually on my bucket list for next year. But
tree
Sweden,
hotel.
I wouldn't say
I've heard of the ice
it's,
hotel, but I haven't
there
heard
is
of
an
the
ice
tree
hotel. Yeah, I would like to visit both. But Sweden's a little off the radar for us. Not so popular.
Interesting. So looking back, you mentioned cash flow as one of the kind of the important things of managing or learning to manage as a startup. What about, if you could go back and do one or two things differently that, you're assessing and so forth, what would they be? Something other than just the cash flow issues. Is there anything that you would do differently?
I think everything's a lesson. I wouldn't say I would do things differently, but I think in the beginning, I kind of had to go through this, but I was a little too trusting of people. I think, and I've since, kind of been able to refine that skill. I think when you're younger and you say, all right, well, I've got this gig and it's great. It'll last forever. They'll never want to to kind of cut this contract, or they'll never want to, kind of end the relationship. And, and I think I just sort of believed that I didn't have to work as hard to find the next, thing waiting in the wings. And you learn very quickly that a company overnight could go out of business. It could be nothing to do with your performance.
Right.
And all of a sudden they just, have to leave, or a company could have a huge issue with finances, not bankruptcy, but, a bad year and not be able to renew you. So I think I'm always kind of motivated, but I learned very quickly, you always have to be looking for the next thing. And I've gotten really good at that. But, there was a time in the beginning, definitely, that I believed, a little too naively that, things were good, so I didn't have to worry, and that's definitely not the case.
Yeah, and I think that it's oftentimes that when you're running a business that you really need to look at your clientele almost as though they are a portfolio. And I don't mean to depersonalize the relationships by suggesting that, but as you just mentioned, if you put all of your emphasis on one big client, or all of the weight on that, where that's the main, you're relying on that for 70% of the revenue and so forth, it's lopsided. And I think that if people look at it as a portfolio, to have a balanced client base, then you start to insulate yourself from those kind of disruptions, as you mentioned, where one may go out of business or they want to end the contract. Talking to other entrepreneurs, talking to other startups, business owners, that's kind of the sense that I obtained from them, is that it's really important to view your customers, view your client base as something that needs to be diversified, so that you're not reliant on just one or two and exposing your business to that vulnerability.
Exactly.
What do you think about if you're running two businesses, in the past we've had guests on talking about work-life balance. We had, any number of business owners talking about that. And if you work for a job, there are some jobs that you may work 8 to midnight every day. I remember you know, some of my colleagues in law and working in Manhattan, and those were kind of the hours, and somebody asked them, you know, what do you work on the weekend? And the response was, you don't understand. It's 8 to midnight every day. So there are some jobs, some positions where the hours are extreme of that nature. But when you're an employee, one would hope that, you know, generally speaking, the hours might be, you know, 9 to 5 or a different shift, 11 to 7, 7 to 3, whatever the case may be. But you're not spending all the time doing that. But where you're running a business, particularly, Gabrielle, when you're running two businesses, then the time shifts a little bit, and that if you're anything like me, I find myself always thinking or my mind wanting to always think about the business, but yet there are family, there's relationships and so forth. So how do you find, do you have any tips for entrepreneurs out there how to balance or find that right balance between building a business, but actually having time out for whether it's family or friends and just being able to relax and enjoy life?
I mean, all of that is, that's incredibly important. And I think if you're not doing that, then you probably can't be the best business owner or even parent or friend or daughter or whatever that you can be, you know, if you're not mixing all of that in. And I think that the fortunate part of, you know, kind of like almost to your point, but also on the other side of that too, with entrepreneurs, a lot of times you can design your own schedule. It's not always like, okay, well, I have to do this and I have to work a certain number
right.
of hours a day.
That's a good point.
That may be, but I think you have to also figure out what works for you. Like, I tend to get up super early. That works for me. A lot of people don't like getting up at 5 o'clock. You know, for me, I thrive because no one is up. My, you know, daughter doesn't have to be at school for another 2-3 hours. I can get clients overseas on the phone and that type of thing. So by 8 o'clock, I've done a lot, you know, and that's, it's a sacrifice. I'd love to sleep more, but that is what I have to do. And I think that, you know, we have to figure out where we can fit things in. Like, I'm a single mom. I have to run to activities every day. So I'm the person in the corner, you know, with the laptop, you know, working
right.
at gymnastics. And that is not easy and not comfortable, but it works for me. You know, I can get a little bit more done. So there are sacrifices you have to make in other ways, whether it's a little bit less sleep or, you know, a late night. But if that's where your peak hours are. But you have to do that in order to have that reserve time, because like by 8 o'clock, I'm just 100% focused on her, you know, getting her out the
right.
door. We do things. And then after school, I'm focused on her as well. So I have to pack as much in during the day. But yeah, I mean, you find your sweet spot, I guess, where you perform best. I'm not a late night person. I'm just not, you know, so I have to, you know, but I'm good at waking up early. So yeah, you find your balance. But I mean, you can't do that at the risk of anybody, you know, anybody's personal relationship with you, because at the end of the day, if your business falls apart, which it could, you're going to need people, you know,
right.
and you need people anyway, but you know, you need a support system even when you're having a bad day. So, you know, all of that can't be ignored just because you're building a business.
Well, I think you raise a really good point, raise a number of good points, but the one that really caught my attention from the beginning of what you just said is that you really can't be your best unless you are participating in each aspect of your life. So that whether that be a family, whether you have children or somebody doesn't have children or friends or you know, siblings and parents, maintaining those relationships and participating in the life and having a full life, I think is finding that sweet spot, that balance, that participating in all of that allows you to be the best person that you can be. And then that redounds to the business and having fun operating a business. Because, I mean, there are advantages, and I'm sure you would agree, there are advantages and disadvantages to owning and running your own business. There's certainly
oh, yeah.
the stress. As you said, even when you are successful, it's always looking at, you know, the next month or where are the next customers coming from. But at the same time, you have that balance of being able to be flexible in your schedule and choosing when you're going to do your work rather than being forced into a structure. But I really think that you raise a really good point in the balance of those parts of your life that are important, and that it's important for all of us to take a step back and identify, one, what is important, and then make time for all of that. That doesn't mean that you need to always be with friends, because you certainly have to work, but I really do think that we become better people and thereby better business owners and employers and so forth by being well-rounded. Does any of that sound right to you?
Well, it all sounds right, and I would even add to that you know, most people that are starting their own business spend a lot of time alone. It's just the nature, you know, of, you know, you maybe don't want to get an office space, or you're working from home, or, you know, you're not in that office environment where at least you're seeing people every day. Like, you know, when I first started, I lived in an apartment by myself, and there were times, if I didn't go to the gym every day, then I wouldn't see a soul, you know what I mean? Because I was working so hard on just different projects. So you run the risk of being really lonely. And I think, you know, if you're not making extra effort to keep your social connections, it can lead to, you know, you being a little, you know, almost in a dark place. So you almost have to make more of an effort, I think, you know, when you're working by yourself, to, you know, stay connected.
That's a very valid point as well. You are right in that it's very easy for us, for people that are running their own business, entrepreneurs, what have you, where you're running a business, to be thinking about it all the time. And it's easy to become focused and kind of mentally closeted on business operations, right? Sitting even in the living room, sitting with the laptop and just focusing on that. And I think that it's important to, you know, look up and participate on what's going around, and not be alone, because you can be both alone with nobody around you, but you can also be alone where there are people around you and you're just not engaged with them. And I think that it's really important to find that balance. Now, in your business, is it just you? Do you have employees?
We do, yeah. I work with an incredible team. It's a small team, and it's people that, excuse me, that I have worked with in the past in another capacity. So I have, you know, I had seen their performance, and I knew them as a worker also, you know what I mean, before becoming a friend. And yeah, it's been an interesting journey. These people are really wonderfully invested. They love what they do, and we all have a nice synergy together. But it's a small team, and purposely, just because I can't take on too much also for myself, because I need to still stay involved in everything. The reason why people kind of hire us is because it's my name on the door and we've done a good job. So I need to be able to kind of contain everything so that I still can be involved in everything without, you know, delegating 100%, you know, just to keep that relationship with the clients.
Now, for those people that may not yet be ready for the wild adventure of, you know, going down the river delta somewhere exotic, what is the best place for, you know, people to learn information about a particular location or city that they might be visiting, and they want to do things that are not the tourist-y trap, so to speak, but not yet for the exotic. So there's a better way of describing it. It seems that there are three kind of categories of vacations that you can take. You can take the prepackaged vacation, whether that's signing up for a tour or doing it yourself, or you go, you stay at, you know, a traditional hotel, you go to the, you know, let's say it's Paris, you go to the Eiffel Tower, you go to the Louvre, and then in between, it might be that maybe you take a step outside. You don't stay at the four-star hotel. You might do something else, Airbnb or VRBO, or staying with the family. And you want to do the things that are not the so-called tourist attractions. And then finally, it seems what Exploratory Journeys is doing is taking that step a bit further and really making creating lifetime experiences that, as you said earlier, would stay in your soul and kind of reverberate. But for those that aren't yet ready for exploratory journeys but do want to kind of venture away from just the tourist attractions or the standards, what is the best way to learn about that? What is the best way to learn to do something different?
I think, you know, well, planning is, it's tough to say because there's, you know, there are so many websites out there and with conflicting information. And I think the best thing is for someone to utilize a tourist office site, you know, just to figure out what there is to do, you know, go to what, you know, the Paris, you know, Paris tourist board site or whatever it's going to be. Figure out, like, find the key points that might interest you. And then if you're not quite ready to delve so much or have too much pre-planned activity, I always find that, okay, having a little bit of like a go-to list is good. Trust your friends and find, you know, get recommendations from them of restaurants they've eaten at and think, you know, people who you trust, not just random people on the internet. And then schedule some time just to wander. Like, I mean, for me, that is the absolute best way to enjoy a city, to discover things. One of my favorite things to do when I land in a city that I've never been or even one that I have been, I love to just get my, you know, get my sneakers on and walk 10 miles a day if I want to or have to, and just cover everything like at my own pace. And I think that is really the best way to discover it on your own time and to find things, to be able to stop and do things that interest you. Or even if you have a little bit of a game plan, you know, you can cover it without being pushed and without a time schedule. I think that that's always a lovely way to right. find the best of the city that works for you.
We're here with Gabriela Ribeiro on Startup Radio, and we're going to be right back talking a bit more about travel, startups, and being an entrepreneur, as well as perhaps get a few takeaways from Gabriela after we take a quick break. Stay tuned. We are now back on Startup Radio, part of the STEM Zadia Network. Gabriela, after, you know, talking about you starting True Marketing, you started Exploratory Journeys, which is kind of taking a heightened or providing a heightened experience for people traveling. You've talked about the pluses and the minuses of running a business and being an entrepreneur. Where do you see yourself or your business in 5 years? You mentioned that you have a small team. Is that going to stay the same, or to maintain that kind of intimacy that your customers, your clients have with you? Where do you see your business in 5 years?
You know, I love the way it is right now. So if it could sort of continue on that track where I'm able to still have a hand in everything, that's always been my vision. What I would love to be able to do is maybe take on larger projects or larger clients and perhaps fewer of them. That's ideally what I would love to be able just to focus a bit more. Right now we are, you know, we're blessed to have an amazing array of clients that we work with, but it is a lot. It's a huge workload. And you know, there are constant demands. And I think, you know, focusing on a much larger, you know, client or maybe perhaps one or two instead of having 11 or 12 that we do, would allow me to delve deeper and kind of get back to my roots of focusing on one destination or one particular product, and kind of, you know, being able to do so much with it, and, you know, being contracted to do more than sometimes we're, you know, contracted for. So that would be a wonderful thing. And I'd love to probably, you know, my daughter will be older in 5 years, and, you know, I travel all the time with her, but maybe going on longer trips or perhaps, you know, being in a place where I could maybe for the you know, a month or two in the summer, live somewhere else, you know, and
yeah.
sort of work in a different place. That's what I would love to do. I always say I'm going to do it, and it just never seems to work out, but
right.
that's a goal. And then sort of establish a, you know, more remote lifestyle, I'd say.
Well, I wish you well, definitely, in that endeavor. I'm going to now ask you, for those that are starting out or those that are out there, I'm going to break the question. I usually say, for those out there, young entrepreneurs, what would you, if you had a couple tips for them, what would they be? But I'm going to break it up into two questions. because based on our conversation, you really have a diverse experience. You have a lot of experience in the travel industry. In fact, having grown up with your parents being in that travel industry. And so that's where I'm going to begin. For those that might be interested in the travel industry in whatever capacity, but not necessarily being an entrepreneur or starting their own company, and that's the second question I'll get to in a moment. But for those that are interested in the travel industry, whether they're in college right now or high school and looking toward college, or maybe they're in a job and dreaming about something different, do you have any recommendations for them on how they might proceed?
In the travel industry specifically?
Yes.
Be open-minded and, you know, don't be afraid to consider yourself an expert in something, even if you're young. I think that's what happens. Like, we're in a really interesting time where we're seeing, I mean, there was a time where the travel industry looked like it was almost like dying out, you know, I mean, people were sort of aging out and retiring, and a lot of the great agents were not, you know, not staying in the industry. And now we're seeing this huge influx of younger people, which I hadn't seen like ever, really. And it's so nice. And I think that, you know, sometimes like people want to get involved because it's a great career, but they get a little timid. You know, so I would say self-education is the biggest investment one can make in themselves, and that in this industry, it's traveling a lot. And once you travel a lot, you have the credibility. So that is like a huge thing for someone to do, and also to build themselves up. A lot of people, when they're starting out, they get afraid to brag. If you've been to a destination 5 times and you know it inside and out, you're an expert, you know, and make yourself appear as one so people trust you and utilize all of the knowledge that you're gathering. You know, don't just go to just enjoy. Make something out of it that's educational. And that's like my best piece of advice if they want to get in and, you know, pick one or two areas that you really can excel in differently than a lot of other people and start there.
And would you agree that for somebody starting in the travel industry, or really any industry for that matter, that if you really are truly starting in the industry, to be prepared and willing to start in a position that may not have been on their radar, that if an opportunity comes up in the industry in which they're wanting to participate, travel, whatever the case may be, that sometimes it may not be the position that you necessarily immediately thought you were going to do, but it's an opening to get in the door and to then go from there. Do you think that fits with the travel industry? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it does. And I think that, you know, because generally this, I mean, you can make a lot of money once you become, you know, a real expert and you've had some years in the game, and it is possible if you're, you know, if you have a huge client list or even a small one with just high value trips, you really can do very well. But I think in the beginning, it's in any industry, not just travel, you always should take that chance to get in the door. And it's a very unrealistic expectation to think, okay, I've graduated college or I've done this or grad school, and I'm going to get this massively paying job just because of who I am. Well, guess what? A lot of other people have that degree too. And work and rising, I think, in work is all about connections. And the more you're in a place where you can connect with people that can help you later on, the better you're going to do later on, you know, instead of sitting and holding out for something that may or may not come. Like when I took my first job, I didn't want to. My dad just said, hey, you should do this because you're not finding a job and where you want to work. And, you know, it just turned out to be the biggest blessing of my life. Like I took a job, I did well, but then the girl I worked for went on maternity leave. She never came back. You know, I didn't predict that. I thought she would. And then they gave me her job and she was at a much higher level than me. And things just progressed from there. So if I hadn't taken that job, yeah, like if I hadn't taken that job and said, well, now I'm going to hold out because I deserve X amount per year and this and that. None of this probably would have happened.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I think back actually to one of my friends in college who was in getting a degree in the hospitality industry. You know, his first job outside of college, even with the degree, was basically being a doormat at a hotel. And on one hand, you might look at that and think, well, why go to school? What's up with that? That's not like getting the job that you want with the college degree. But looking back on it, and I can see from now, from running my own business, not a hotel for sure, but running my own business, that there's a perspective in having somebody start in a position and learning all aspects of that operation. And so I think that what was occurring in that instance is, yes, it was being the doorman, but it was also learning about that initial customer experience where you're the first person that greets the clients of the hotel coming in, and learning about that operation, and then shifting to another position perhaps in the hotel and learning about that, so that as you do move up, you understand the way that the hotel operates. And if anybody wants to be in hotel management, it's not just walking into that management position necessarily. You have to understand what you're managing. And I think that, it's a humbling, I guess that's the word that I was looking for earlier. You need to sometimes be humble and or allow an experience to be humbling. Take the job, get in, excel, do really well, and roads will open up for you. Let's turn to the other part of the question, or the second question that I was going to ask you, and that is, now putting aside the travel industry specifically, let's talk to any advice to those individuals, young or old, that are out there in any particular industry thinking about taking the leap and starting their own business. What is a piece of advice that you would have for those that are just thinking about that have not yet taken that plunge? What advice would you have for them?
To work in a travel agency for a bit of time. Or a tour company, because it's made me, or even work in a hotel, for example, like any of those types of jobs is, you know, quote unquote, like the starting point, I'd say. But you're really going to see all types. Like if you are in a traditional travel agency, you're going to learn, you know, what happens when a customer calls. You're going to see other people and the way that they speak to the clients. You're going to start to hear names of places and that you might not have ever known about, you know, but that are on the radar or popular. Like you're going to learn processes and best practices while people are giving you the leads, you know, because it's really hard to do it by yourself. So, you know, once you get comfortable with speaking to clients and the booking process, then you can look at doing something on your own. But I think it's really beneficial to have that kind of background, or even if you've worked in a hotel, spending time on property for the hotels that I worked for have made me such a better marketer and such a better have such a better understanding of what a guest wants and needs when they stay at a hotel. You know, I stay at hundreds of hotels, like, you know, every year. But it's different when you're working on property to understand. So, I mean, anything really in the travel industry is always going to, you know, if you get a job, no matter what it is, like you said, the doorman or whichever, it will always kind of help you see what a guest is looking for and then be able to better serve that guest as a hospitality right. professional.
And would you recommend to those that are wanting to start their own business that they go for it? Or is there something that you think, some criteria that needs to exist before you'd give somebody the green light? And that's whether it's the travel industry or anything else. Is there something that needs to be there for, like if a friend came to you, I guess, and said, hey, I'm thinking of starting a business doing X, what is it that you would say or ask them before you would be prepared to say, go for it, let's do it?
I would ask them first, you know, why they're doing it. The second question is, what makes you better than anybody else, or your product, you know, better than anybody else? I think you have to have those two answers clear, that you shouldn't even have to hesitate. They should just roll off your tongue. And the third is, how good of a self-starter are you? Because when you're doing your own thing, it sounds like obvious, but nobody is going to push you to do anything. You know, like you have to do it all. People forget that. You know, it's like, oh, I could just, you know, it's kind of turnkey. I'm going to do this, move that. No, you have to put in a ton of hours. You have to make a ton of phone calls. You have to think about everything from A to Z, especially if you're working with people or you're taking on a small team. You are responsible for every single thing Like, nobody's going to follow. It's like when you go to college, like, nobody follows up with you if you did your paper. And if you don't do them, then you're in trouble. And you have to be a really, really good self-starter. I know a lot of people who want to start businesses, and then they come and chat with me. And I tell them right up, like, you don't want to get out of the house, or, before 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning, or you don't want to do this, or you find this uncomfortable. How are you going to do your own business, or do your own thing? If these basic things, getting to work on time and this type of stuff is a struggle for you, that doesn't seem like it's going to work. So either they have to take 3 months of practicing of getting up super early, or, 3 to 6 months of, I don't know, like saving money, because they're really bad with money, and I can see right away they won't be good with cash flow. Take a couple months and try to save X amount per month and see how you do. But I think everybody knows themselves, and if you're a self-starter or not. And if you're really honest with yourself, that's I think that to me the biggest criteria.
Well, I think those are all items that are really good advice and for our listeners and others as well. Gabriella, it's been fantastic talking with you about the travel industry, about exploratory journeys, and I would recommend to anybody that's wanting that heightened experience in travel and vacation, visiting an exotic land or any country for that matter, and having something that's going to reverberate in the soul, as I think you mentioned earlier, highly recommend reaching out to Exploratory Journeys. I certainly will be thinking about that in the future. Again, I really want to thank you, Gabriella, for taking the time with us today to be on Startup Radio.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
This has been another episode of Startup Radio, part of the StemDadia Network, with our sister shows Gaming Chords and STEM Voices. Please stay tuned for new episodes in all three shows on the StemDadia Network. This has been your host, Charles Mudd. I wish you all well, and be safe. Thank you.